Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome in, everybody. We want to welcome all listeners across the Gulf South and beyond here on the Community Coffee Saints Radio Network. It's time for the GM show here in the Saints Hour featuring Executive Vice President and General Manager of the New Orleans Saints, Mickey Loomis. And Mickey, certainly another big win for your football team. Seven in a row now. It's not an easy thing to do in the National Football League. Longest winning streak since 2018. And, you know, you guys are finding different ways to win every single game. That's what Sean talks about. And it's got to give you guys a lot of confidence moving forward.
Well, first of all, good to be with you, Zach. Listen, seven wins in a row is awesome. I'll take it every time. Excuse me. It's hard to do, and it makes Pittsburgh's accomplishment of winning 10 in a row quite a tremendous accomplishment for them. Look, you go into this game, and there's some unknowns when Drew's not behind center. I think we all felt confident that Taysom Hill would play well, and we were excited that he did. But I think the story of this game was as much the defense as anything.
Yeah, there's no question. I think, you know, leading in the big questions, the national narrative on this game was about the quarterback position. But after you watch that football game, it was a defensive it was another huge performance by your defense. And really the reason I think that this game ended up as it was, they've been phenomenal now, really dating back to the Chicago Bears game. And, you know, for a defense early in the year where we talked about, man, everything's good except for these penalties and these big plays, and you kept hearing, if we could just knock these out, we could be a pretty good defense. And now we're finding that a pretty good defense was probably a gross misstatement.
Yeah, they've certainly played well for this stretch. And, look, I think looking back, I would probably say that the defense missed having a preseason and preseason games more so than we might have expected, given the amount of guys that returned. They were fantastic. We got a lot of pressure on the quarterback, as we have for the last few weeks. A lot of guys stepped up. It's not just one guy. It's all three levels of our defense. The defensive line, the linebackers, and the back end all played well, in particular this game.
Mickey, 2 of 14 on third down. Obviously, situational football is such a big part of this league. And when you hold an offense to that type of number, there's all kinds of other things that are going to be in your favor. The time of possession, which is something that's talked about. You know, likely when you're that good on third down, you're maybe creating some turnovers on that down. The everything kind of goes and rolls in a game as the third down conversion are, the turnover ratio, all those things you guys talk about. And you did that on the back end with an excellent group of wide receivers without Marshawn Lattimore, kind of again exhibiting the type of depth that you guys have created. So talk a little bit about that secondary, how this defense in general really performed on that down.
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, you know, let's talk about third down itself. You know, 2 for 14 is a fantastic number, 14%. And look, Zach, I know you've heard this because you've been in the meetings, but third down is either a down that you're going to turn the ball over, force them to punt, or it's a four-point play. And, you know, in the case of this game, look, three times we had stops on third down that turned into four-point plays, and so holding them to field goals. And without that, it's, you know, it's 21 points on the board, not nine. And then maybe it's a little different game as we get in the fourth quarter. So they were fantastic. I think the back end has been playing well. In particular, this game, it was great to see Patrick Robinson step in for Marshawn Lattimore and have another good game. He's done that. He did that previously. I think it was against Las Vegas that that he came in and played and did well. Janoris Jenkins, you know, to have an interception and five passes defensed in a game is really a highly productive performance, and he's playing well. Marcus Williams, you know, has done well, and obviously the addition of Malcolm Jenkins is been fantastic for us, and I think that Malcolm, as he's gotten more comfortable playing in this defense, has raised his level of performance over the last few weeks as well.
It was Detroit. I don't mean to call you out on your own show, but it was Detroit. I'll throw that out there. How about let me ask you this question. Deuce and I have been saying this, and we were saying this for the first 5 weeks of the season. I'm curious if you felt any differently. You know, we watch this training camp, and we watch how well this secondary looked all training camp long. We just raved about them, right? I mean, it's now my job to walk out of practice and make a brash statement that's probably inappropriate given the little bit that I had seen that day. But we said over and over, man, this group could be really special. And you get into the season, and for the first 3 or 4 weeks, you're like, wait a second. Like, where did this group go that we had such a high opinion of? And Deuce and I start asking ourselves, are we horrible evaluators? It's possible, right? I've never done that professionally.
Yeah, it's possible.
Was there a period for you guys early on where you're just saying, like, man, when is this going to turn? Because I know what I saw, and what I saw was special.
Yeah, I would echo that. I felt like, you know, during training camp, man, I was excited about the secondary and the way they were playing. I do think this. I think in those first 3 or 4 games, I think we had 10 defensive penalties, interference penalties. Yeah. And I think that probably was a little bit of a shock to our system. I don't know how that affected our guys psychologically, but I know it affected those games. And, you know, look, some of them were good calls, and some of them were what you would say, what most of us would say are marginal, but they got called. And I think that set us back a little bit early on. But I felt like in the last few games, these guys have been playing really well and getting their hands on a lot of balls. Every throw, it feels like, is contested. And look, we have to recognize that those other guys on the other side are getting paid too, so they're going to make plays. But as long as you're contesting every throw and making it tough on the other team, good things are going to happen.
Well, we got to talk about the quarterback position after that game, and Taysom Hill steps in for his first NFL start. I think, you know, clearly performed certainly well enough to win that football game, and I think for a lot of people exceeded, you know, some expectations. So I want to get your thoughts on his first start, but I also there's something in there, and I'm curious about how you guys evaluate something like this when you have a young quarterback, and now Taysom's 30 years old, but he's young and experienced as a starting quarterback. You know, the one thing for me that you never quite know until you know is how does that guy deal with pressure, with that kind of, hey, now the real rush is in your face and you're dealing with that type of stuff. How does a guy respond? I thought it was interesting. Taysom Hill in his first NFL start is 10 of 11 for 175 yards when he was blitzed, which is a pretty impressive stat line and certainly something we've seen with Drew for years now. But I'm just curious of what your thoughts were on the start and how much of a difference it does mean to see him stand in there with a defender bearing down and deliver a pass really for the first time in a real live action situation.
Yeah. Well, look, I think, you know, a couple things. First of all, I think we expected him. Most of us expected him to play well. Now, how well, that's, you know, a matter of degree under the circumstances. But, man, he was really efficient, 18 of 23. And I didn't feel like – now, listen, I'm sure he would say and our coaches would say there's some things that he could have done better and some things that as he gets more comfortable, he'll correct. But there was a couple throws in the game, and I can't remember exactly when it was, but there was a couple throws where he climbed the pocket, took a hit and delivered an accurate ball. And man, when you see that happen, that's what gets you excited, is that he's moving around the pocket, but he's got his eyes down the field, and he's got the courage to hang in there and take a hit and deliver a ball. And that was exciting. It was exciting to see him have success. And I would say, look, there was a lot of pressure on him in this game. It's tough when you're taking a team that's won six in a row and you're expected to keep carrying the torch. And on top of that, by the way, you're following one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of our game. That's pressure, and he handled all that remarkably well. And I also want to say this, is that, look, we're 6-0 now in the last 2 years, not having our starting quarterback, and that is a credit to our coaching staff, and they've done a fantastic job of making adjustments, adjusting the game plans, and finding what last year Teddy Bridgewater and this year what Taysom, what they do well, and catering a game plan.
Stick around for more of the GM show here on the Saints Hour. I'm Zach Strieve. He is Mickey Loomis, Executive Vice President and General Manager for the New Orleans Saints, and you're listening to the Community Coffee Saints Radio Network. Welcome back to the GM show here in the Saints Hour. This is the Community Coffee Saints Radio Network. I'm Zach Strieve, along with Mickey Loomis, the Executive Vice President and General Manager for the New Orleans Saints, and joined now by VP and Assistant General Manager, Director of College Personnel, Jeff Ireland. We were just talking off air, Jeff. A lot of titles, a lot of wordy things. It's almost like it's like an obstacle course to introduce people around here. So, but you're in charge of college scouting, done a fantastic job of that over the last few years, and we want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. All it means is I work for Mickey.
I like it.
I want to go back, Jeff, just to this past draft. You guys, four draft picks in the draft: Cesar Ruiz, Zach Bond, Adam Trautman, Tommy Stevens, and we're watching now all three of these guys contributing to this team. Cesar Ruiz has taken on what I would consider a shared starting role. Has certainly been in the lineup a lot and has played at a high level. Zach Bond, who I think still might have the hit of the year on special teams, and then Adam Trautman gets his first touchdown, a call that I screwed up, just so you're aware, in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers game. I called him Josh Hill, and I felt terrible about it. And I thought to myself, Josh looks thin when I said it. And then I said, that's Adam Trautman. So I feel horrible about that. But go through a little bit. I'd like to hear what your guys' thoughts were on each of these guys coming in. And maybe what was your perception when you drafted him? And has that perception changed? Has there been any surprises, pleasant or not? Yeah, you, Jeff.
Well,
you're on.
Look, I'll start with Cesar. Cesar started 2 years at center and kind of a half a year as freshman, his true freshman year at guard at Michigan. And look, we really like the makeup of the kid. It always starts with the makeup. We love the makeup of the kid. He's smart. He's tough, dependable, accountable, all that stuff. But then just his consistency level playing the center position, he had great hands. He's got gigantic hands. When you say 11 hand, that's a big, big hand. We think that's an important quality to have for interior offensive linemen. But his consistency level and his work to finish were some of the key factors that we liked about Cesar. As we go down to Zach Bond, now Zach played kind of an outside linebacker for Wisconsin, and I think he was second in the Big Ten in sacks that year to Chase Young. Really good pass rusher, really good motor, intensity. He's just what you want in a linebacker. Again, high makeup kid. Not surprising, he's having great success on special teams. He started two games. We'd love to get him a little bit more active in the base and just regular snaps on defense. But real high upside with him. And then Adam Trautman, look, he's playing 30% of the offensive snaps. He's playing 30% of the special team snaps. All three of those guys, you can say, are getting better week in and week out. You're seeing him do a little bit more each week. Adam's getting more involved in the offense, which we love. And I think all three have a great upside for the future. And I think when we went into this draft, and Mickey can attest to this, we weren't really looking for a lot of quantity. We're looking for quality players in the draft that can come in right away, contribute, And we knew that the pandemic was going to be an issue with OTAs and training camp. We foresaw that right off the bat. And we said, hey, look, we're not going to have to – we're not going to draft guys that we're going to have to spend a lot of time developing. So when we drafted these three guys, we had these three guys in mind in terms of coming in right away and being able to help us.
Talk a little bit, and both for both of you guys, the difficulties and maybe the unique nature of this past offseason and putting together you know, your draft boards without the ability to bring a guy in for a visit and all of that, those in-person things were really eliminated from the process, and maybe how that affected you guys.
Yeah, I think, first of all, you know, one of the things that's really important to us as an organization is Jeff talked about the character of the guy, and that encompasses a lot, the makeup of a player, how he learns, how he interacts with coaches and teammates. And so you get a lot of that. You get some of that, not a lot of it. You get some of that when you have in-person visits, whether they come to your facility or you're at the combine and you get to do the interviews. The pro days we do, you know, we spend as much time with the player talking to them personally as we do watching the workouts. And so that's what was missing this year. And so we're relying on Jeff's and our area scouts and our coaches' relationships with, you know, position coaches and coordinators and head coaches at these respective schools. And I felt like, man, our guys did a fantastic job of making those calls, taking advantage of the relationships that they had to gather that kind of information. You know, you took the low-hanging fruit relative to this year's draft, but I'd like Jeff to talk a little bit about a couple of undrafted free agents that his guys found and that have already made significant contributions to this season, and Malcolm Roach and Marquez Callaway.
Yeah, well, there were 36 receivers drafted in this past draft, and I think there's only – I looked at starting in the third round going down, there's only two players – at the receiver position, have caught more balls than Marquez Callaway, and that's a, you know, it's a great a testament to our scouts and our coaches for identifying Marquez, and he's a great kid, and he's done a great job on special teams as well as offense. He stepped right in for Mike and Traquan when these guys were out, and so really excited about the future for him, and like he stepped right in for Deontay Harris as well in a couple of games, so. He's a bright kid. He's learning the offense more and more each day, and really excited about his future.
Jeff, I want to go back to a name that you just mentioned. And we had Curtis Johnson on the coach's show last night, and we asked him about Deontay Harris. And maybe, you know, I'm just curious, as a guy comes in, he's obviously, you know, he's a returner, and that was his MO in college, and, you know, all the 13 kicks returned in college and the 8 punts and all those things, and yet – we've kind of watched Deontay Harris slowly develop into an offensive weapon. And I'm curious, when you guys, you know, initially started on Deontay, if there were traits there that you saw genuinely where you said, hey, he could also maybe play a role in this offense, or if that's been one of those pleasant surprises when you actually get the guy in person.
Yeah, look, when you watch the tape, you know, he's playing at a really small school, and – look, he's a dominant athlete, an elite athlete, elite quickness, elite stop and start, but he's small. And so you look at the returnability as make you miss, and you say, okay, well, he can certainly do that. But then to project a 5'6", 160-pound, you know, offensive player, we're not in the business of projecting that. It's really when we got him here, when – you could put him in a closet with 5 other people and he'll make them all miss. That we learned that, hey, man, we got to get this guy on the offensive side of the ball. And you certainly saw it in college, but you didn't see it to the degree that we see it now once you get him on the football field. He's got great hands, and he's smart, he's tough. And some of those things you just can't see and you can't tell until you get him here.
All right, we'll step away. More from the GM show, Jeff Ireland and Mickey Loomis, here on the Community Coffee Saints Radio Network. Welcome back to the GM Show here on the Saints Hour. You're listening to the Community Coffee Saints Radio Network. I'm Zach Strieve here with Saints General Manager Mickey Loomis, along with Assistant General Manager Jeff Ireland. I'll ignore the business side of your equations, all right? And we'll just stick with those titles. Jeff, your family's been around this game for a long time. Your grandfather was a personnel man with the Chicago Bears, and I'm just curious maybe how that influenced your decision to get into the game and things that maybe you remember as a kid and getting to watch, you know, your grandfather in that role.
Well, look, it was probably one of the more influential things that I ever did in my life was being around my grandfather and being able to go to training camp with him every single summer, starting at 11 years old. 1981 was my first time being around. I don't know if I was actually a ball boy in 81, but 82 was my first year as a ball boy. And all through 86, 87, I think, I was a ball boy. So every summer, and so I got to be around the 85 Bears, which was iconic. Obviously, if you've ever been in my office, I've got two or three pictures of Walter Payton and myself. He gave me the shoes that he wore in the Super Bowl after the Super Bowl. I've got a lot of memorabilia from those times. But those times and those days around that team, around my grandfather, really influenced me to want to be around football for the rest of my life, which really I've been around it for 36, 37 years, if you think about it, you know, going on to play at Baylor for those 4 years and then coaching and then scouting and in those ball boy years. That's a lot of years around professional football.
There's one other. We talked about this year's draft earlier. There's another draft as we kind of get to this, and I'm not – Mickey's laughing at me. I think he's going to think we're talking about my draft, which I am going to ask you for a comparison. In 2006, there was a good draft class. I was blessed to be a part of a talented group, played for a long time. And 4 years after we came in, we won a Super Bowl here. 2006 was that draft class. 2009 is the Super Bowl. I'm not asking for predictions on the end of this season. But in 2017 – you guys had one of the more successful drafts. Again, I think this is going to shape up in this direction in NFL history. You draft Ryan Ramczyk and Marshawn Lattimore in the first round, Alvin Kamara in the third. You get Trey Hendrickson in that draft, Marcus Williams in that draft, Alex Anzalone in that draft. And you see repetitively over history these draft classes that can build foundations for championships. So a couple of things. One, how far along with that group in 2017, and maybe Mickey, you can compare that to 2006, which was a very different time around here. When do you see, oh my gosh, we might have really, like, we really might have done something here. You know, we've got a really special group, and maybe, you know, why does that type of a group? It's only four or five players, but why does that type of a foundation mean such a big thing to an organization?
Well, it's twofold, really. First is the play on the field. And, man, if you get immediate contributions from two or three or four or five players out of a draft right away, boy, that impacts your success on the field. The other part of that, though, is the quality of the character of the people in that draft. You know, the 2006 draft, I think I've told you this before, but I went back and looked at and tried to find another draft where they had that many guys who had 10-year playing careers, which, you know, there's about 4 or 5% of a draft class each year is going to play 10 years. And we had, I think it was six, if I remember right, that played 10 years. That's just remarkable. And a credit to not just their talent, but to the character of the people. And this 2017 draft feels a lot like that. It's not just their play on the field, although I would say this group is probably a little more decorated than the 06 group at this point. But I feel like, man, they're smart. They're high-character players and obviously very productive on the field and have had an immediate impact on winning, just like the 2006 draft. And look, this draft class of 17 is a real credit to Jeff and his staff. And look, it's been talked about a lot over the years, but the guy that's always not talked about is Trey Hendrickson. And lo and behold, he's tied for the lead in sacks in the NFL with 9.5 with Myles Garrett. How about that?
They're talking about him now.
They're talking about him
now.
He's
coming up all of a sudden, huh?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, and Jeff, what do you, you know, again, when do you look at that draft class and realize, you know, is it right away? Do you get them in the building and, you know, 3 weeks into camp, you're like, oh, my gosh, they're all pretty good? Or, you know, how long does it take to really see, man, we're going to settle in pretty good here?
Well, I remember telling Mickey right after the draft, I'm like, I can't remember a draft that – and well, first of all, you go off your grades. You go off of the grades that you had on those players. Mm-hmm. And I think after the draft, I think we had taken five players. Is it five? Six. We had six players out of our top – I'm going to be throwing out a number – top 90.
Mm-hmm.
And that just doesn't happen. You get six players out of your top 90 – usually never happens. I remember telling Mickey, I said, man, this, if we're right, this has a chance to be really special. And look, I think we're right. You know, obviously, a lot of these players have played at a real high level, and we're just, you know, super proud of them, obviously. So we knew kind of right away if we were right grading them, then we would have something special.
Let's look forward a little bit. College football season is just like every other season right now. It's an interesting year, right? There's a lot of issues going on. It's going to bleed into bowl games and all-star games and all of these tools that you guys have used. There's been a number of players opt out of the college football season. What kind of challenges is it presenting? How have you guys attacked it? And really, you know, it's interesting because you kind of caught the tail end of this in last year's evaluation. What things have you learned going through the little bit that you did at the end of the process that maybe is helping you as you go through this season and continue the process?
Well, one thing, we've become very good at virtual meetings, conference calling, Zooming, yeah. WebExing. We've become very good at that. And I just came off of two before I came down here for this show. We're constantly on the phone with coaches. We're constantly on Zoom calls, WebEx calls with staff members at colleges. We're not allowed to travel right now. We can travel to a game. We're not allowed on the field. We can travel to a campus, and only if the school is holding a practice at their game stadium. Otherwise, we're not allowed to travel or be on campus at all. So that's different than any other time in history. I've been in this business for 26 years, and I've always been gone 3 to 4 days a week, if not 2 weeks in a row, on the road scouting. So you multiply that by 7, 8, 9 scouts, we're stuck at home on these Zoom calls. So, you know, you expand that to not being able to see the player on the live, not being able to visit with the coach eye to eye, you know, not being able to talk to the academic advisor, you know, eye to eye. You know, these one-off, you know, meetings that we have with these people that we've had for 20 years or every year, they mean something to us, obviously. And now we're having to have it with 50 or 60 other people on the same call because, you know, the college doesn't want to have a lot of these one-off calls. We'll have those one-off calls after the season, but, you know, the combine is going to be affected. We've already had two or three bowl games, all-star games be canceled. That's going to have an effect on how we evaluate and how we gather our information. So a lot of this stuff is changing. It's still fluid situation as we go forward. But we're adapting. We're adapting, and that's all we can do.
Yeah, I think one of the things about this year is that I look at it like this is a real opportunity, because the best evaluators, the best scouts, the best personnel people are going to shine, and we're going to have an advantage over some other teams. The way I look at it, with Jeff, with his staff, the confidence that we have in them, and the talent that they have, I think it's an advantage for us, and I think that this will be a great draft for us.
Last one for both of you guys. I'll let you run. I know everybody's busy. The college game has been affecting the way that the direction of the NFL has gone for a few years now, and certainly that's continued to be the case. I want to read a quote. I just want to get your guys' thoughts on the statement in general. This comes from Nick Saban, who's obviously very well respected. He said, "It used to be that good defense beats good offense. Good defense doesn't beat good offense anymore. That's not the way it used to be. It used to be if you had a good defense, other people weren't going to score. You were always going to be in the game. I'm telling you, it ain't that way anymore. It's hard to coach defense now because there's so many run-pass concepts in what everybody does. I mean, it's really, really hard to coach the secondary because you get so many mismatches back there. So two things there. One, you know, from the perspective of who you're bringing in to coach players and the schemes that you're using, the difficulty in a really good defensive mind saying it's almost impossible at this point. And then also how that affects you guys as you build a roster, the types of players that are going to become increasingly more valuable based on the system that is kind of flowing into the NFL now.
Mickey and I talk about this all the time, how our rules and certainly the college rules are slanted towards the offense. And, you know, it's hard to play defense. We talk about it all the time. I think it's every single week that Mickey and I have a conversation about pass interference or holding or, you know, illegal contact in the secondary, how difficult it is to play defense. But, you know, what Coach Saban's talking about, these run-pass concepts, is, look, you know, there's like a check on every single, you know, every single play. You know, he can pull that ball and throw it, or he can give it. And it's just all a matter of a one little look. You know, I think offenses in college, I think the players that are being taught at an early, early age to throw, to catch, to run routes, the nutrition that's now being a really big part of youth. College kids are so much more adept at, you know, playing and, you know, playing early. So,
yeah, I think, you know, when I started 1983, the defense could physically affect receivers, you know, with the rules, with the techniques that they use that were allowed. And slowly but surely, you know, that's gone away. And it's conducive to, you know, offensive football and more scoring. And that's what we see. It's definitely difficult, more difficult to play defense now than it's been at any other time.
Gentlemen, it's been very insightful. I enjoy the conversation. I know it's crazy times and unique situations. I know Saints fans everywhere are glad to have as much experience as we do at the top. And thank you guys both, and we'll see you around, or maybe just talk to you around.
Well, good. Thanks for having us, Zach, and happy Thanksgiving to you. Next time we'll get into your Jeff's evaluation of Zach Strief when he came out of Northwestern.
Jeff, I'd love to share with you the story sometime of Mickey's recollection of my evaluation. It was really glowing.
I'm sure it was.
It was really glowing. It's a great story. If we had time, I'd get into it, but unfortunately we don't. So thank you guys both, and happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
Likewise to you and the fans.
All right, when we come back, I'll be joined by Ben Hale, Senior VP, Chief Operating Officer of the New Orleans Saints, here on the GM Show. You're listening to the Saints Hour on the Community Coffee Saints Radio Network. Welcome back to the GM Show here on the Saints Hour. You're listening to the Community Coffee Saints Radio Network. I'm Zach Strief, joined now by Saints Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of the New Orleans Saints, Ben Hales. Ben, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's been, listen, we've talked a lot over the last couple of weeks with Mickey and with his staff about just how much of an effect COVID and all of the protocols have been. And I know very much the same for you guys upstairs, and in particular, what you guys have had to do in order to make the Superdome as safe of an environment as it has been. So just talk a little bit about how extensive the process was of putting those protocols in place, and then really how proud you are of your team of being able to execute them the way that they have.
Yeah, it's really been a great success story. And the work really started back in April, figuring out how we were going to safely host fans. And that's really what it's about. If we couldn't do it in a safe way, if we couldn't keep our fans safe, our staff safe, the players safe, there was no point in doing it. And very early on, we got a great medical team to work with us, the best experts in the field, a lot of help from Ochsner as well, and their team, and ASM, who runs stadiums around the globe, all got sat down and figured out what are going to be the best practices. And really, by the time the NFL started sending down guidance, we'd already established those protocols and were ready to roll, ready to implement, ready to start training so that when we were granted permission by local government, they had confidence in our plan, and we knew we'd be able to keep people safe, and that's exactly what's happened.
What has the process been? I know the level of fans has switched. It was family and friends, about 750. It went to 3,000. Or was it 3,500?
It was a little over 3,000.
A little over 3,000, and then now up to 6,000. So kind of explain the process for how that's determined, you know, what needs to continue happening. I know there's a hope and a plan that it increases, but maybe what goes into that number?
Sure. I think, you know, the city of New Orleans really wanted to take an incremental approach to this. They had a lot of confidence in our plan, but they've been very careful and wanted us to prove it, and wanted our fans to prove it. They wanted us to prove that people would listen to the protocols, that they would do what we asked them to do, and they really have. And so with each step, you know, they have monitored this. We have monitored it. We have people walking through the stadium, monitoring compliance. And then there was a lot of follow-up afterwards to make sure that there are no issues. We've had no issues traced back to us. We get reports on that after every game. So we've been able to prove that our system works, that we can safely host people. And as we've been able to prove that, we've been able to move up those steps incrementally and be able to host more fans, and that's what we'll continue to do.
Talking with Ben Hales, Senior Vice President, Chief Operating Officer for the New Orleans Saints, there was a lot of talk, and it's been really around the country, right? Everybody's dealing with these same problems about the difference of being outside and inside. And I know there's some unique things in the Superdome that really make it a safe indoor environment. I was wondering if you could maybe share some of the things that makes the Superdome uniquely beneficial for this situation.
Sure. We've got, you know, one of the simple things is we've got an air filtration system in the Superdome that's state of the art that was really put in post 9/11 to address any potential issues that were out there. It's what you would expect if you're in an airplane or a hospital or anything else. So not only do we have that system in place, we make sure it's tested and that we're able to ensure that the quality of air in there and the movement of air in addition is just as safe, if not safer, as being outside.
Ben, you've had an opportunity, I would assume, at some point to be in there maybe for one of these games. Maybe I'm wrong. But what do you guys think? I know, you know, there's been for a long time such a focus on the fan game day experience. You guys 2 years in a row have been the number one fan experience in the National Football League, something I'm sure you're all very proud of. What have you guys done, and how do you think the results have been in terms of even giving that small group of people, you know, a great experience inside the Superdome?
Yeah, it's certainly been a challenge. I mean, a lot of things that we traditionally would be able to do take place on the field. That's the focal point. Not having access to that has meant we've had to pivot, do a lot more things on the video screens. Good thing that they're huge now. and we've been able to try to take some of those traditions and rituals and transfer those to those boards. It's not the same. But I think people really understand where we're at. And when they're able to connect with it that way, things we've been able to do on our app even for Dome at Home. The other side of that is, you know, as much as we want to make sure that people who are in the stadium are engaged, the people who aren't able to come, we want them to be able to participate too. And really the task that we've assigned to people coming to the games is to make sure they represent those who can't be there as well as possible. And, you know, I think from that first game, probably when we had 3,000, when fans started chanting again and it was – you know, you kind of felt like this feels a little bit more normal. You know, those first couple of games without fans were not normal.
I mean, very weird.
It's not great when you hear the other teams, everything they're saying on their bench and they're on the other side of the field. It felt all wrong. And just adding 3,000, certainly 6,000, has made it feel right. You hear the right noises at the right times. It's not as loud as we're used to, but the fans that are there, man, they're into it, and it's been a huge help to us. You can see especially how our players respond to that. We have always had this great interaction between the crowd and our fans that they play off each other so much, you know, when the teams line up to kickoff and dancing and everything else that's going on.
Yeah.
Seeing that interaction again makes it feel right, and you can see in the players how much they react, what they were doing with fans versus what they weren't. I mean, before, just kind of standing around. So it makes a difference to us on the field. I mean, it really does. You've been out there. You know what it feels like when fans kind of bring you to that next level. And even if it's you know, 6,000, 15,000, whatever it is, it's going to help us win games.
You think there's some things that you guys have had to do this year because of the situation? You talked about engaging fans at home. Even when everyone's allowed in the stadium and you got 73,000, there's 100,000 people that want to be in there. You think some of that stuff will carry over and maybe teach you guys ways to engage with people at home better?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great point. I think we've found that there are a lot of people who are season ticket holders and they go to every game. And then there are people who split tickets, and there are all different ways and maybe get to come in one time a year, buy tickets off the secondary market. But what you really key in and makes it special are those traditions and rituals that connect you to the game. And anytime we can replicate that at home or remind you of you're still part of this experience, you may not be there today, but you're part of the collective. I mean, you know, I look at it, the way our community gets involved. I mean, every Friday my kids are wearing black and gold to school and getting involved. There's been kind of a resurgence in that, too, from people saying, I just want to show the flag a little bit. I want to be involved. And we're looking for more ways for people to be able to do that.
Talking with Ben Hale, Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer for the Saints. Ben, we appreciate the time. I know all the fans appreciate all the effort you guys have made to get anybody that you can into the building and to do it in a safe way. And hopefully in the future we'll get everyone back in. But in the meantime, thank you all for all of your efforts.
Look, thank you, and a huge thank you to the people who are helping us put this on, and most of all to the fans who are doing their job by adhering to all these guidelines and allowing us to keep bringing more people in. They're doing a great job keeping each other safe and allowing us to have more fans in. We really appreciate it.
All right. That'll do it for us here in the GM Show in the Saints Hour. We're going to kick it back to Bobby Hebert and Mike Dottiglia. You've been listening to the Community Coffee Saints Radio Network.
Mike Dottiglia and Bobby Hebert back on the Community Coffee Saints Radio Hour. Bobby, got a situation here, Saints traveling to Denver. Your old buddy Vic Fangio as the head coach of the Broncos, great matchup with his mind now trying to figure out a way to slow down this Saints offense.
And he can do it. This is the one thing. This is the kind of game that I would say shame on the Saints if they don't win. If they score like they've done since 2006, the upper 20s. If we get 27 points, ain't no way in hell we're losing. I even think right now, Mike, 24 points. You don't want it to be kind of like what happened with the Dolphins. You don't want it to be like 20-13, 17-13 type game. I think our defense will have success against their offense. I think more of the challenge is our offense going against their defense. Because I think Mile High Stadium, Mike, I can remember playing up there. Then all of a sudden, you know, you are in shape. You get in that thin air. I remember in the second quarter, I remember one time I played the USFL championship there in the summer against Coach Moore and the Stars when I was playing in Michigan. And it was the middle of the second quarter. I went in a long run. I'm in the huddle. I'm like, oh, it's not even halftime. I said, I might pass out. And how embarrassing that would be. But then you get acclimated and you just keep going. But the one thing Martin Anderson always told me, as far as those long kicks, if you can make a 60-yard field goal, you can make a 65-yard. The air is that thin as long as you're accurate.
All right, I think a big key is stopping the run of the Broncos on the defensive side of the football. Bobby, we want to thank Zach Strief, Mickey Loomis, yourself, and you were listening to the Community Coffee Saints Radio Hour.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!